Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. The Trump administration is accelerating the rate of construction of the 18 to 30 foot border wall between the United States and Mexico. So far, they've built 400 miles of wall in remote regions of the border. They want to build another 35 before they leave office, and the impacts have been devastating. According to a recent NPR piece, contractors are dynamiting mountainsides, cutting roads, and bulldozing pristine deserts for a barrier that the incoming Biden administration is expected to cancel. Joe Biden says there will not be another foot of wall constructed after he takes office. But right now, 13 different contractors are working all day and all night on 29 projects from San Diego to Brownsville, Texas, to meet Trump's goal. The project is costing a whopping $15 billion. That's billion with a B. Along the way, there are 6 wildlife refuges, 6 national parks, tribal lands, wilderness areas, and conservation areas, all of them managed by various federal agencies and tribal governments. NPR reports that the Department of Homeland Security has waived dozens of federal environmental protections, such as the Endangered Species Act, in order to erect the wall in these sensitive areas and to avoid lawsuits. On October 12th, Indigenous Peoples Day, members of the Tohono O'odham Nation, whose lands have been split by the wall, blocked the highway passing through the Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument in Arizona. And border police responded with tear gas. They arrested 8 people. Joining us to talk about the damage this is doing to native lands, the environment, and animals is Dan Millis, a Borderlands Program Manager for the Sierra Club Grand Canyon Chapter in Arizona. He says border construction has had a huge impact on some of the most remote and biodiverse landscapes in what is now North America. Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Well, can we just go over some basics first? So far, the Trump administration has built 400 miles of wall in mostly remote regions of the border.
That's correct. They claim to have built 423 miles, and you've probably heard a lot of reports in the press that most of this is so-called replacement wall. But what people need to understand is that what's being replaced is basically a vehicle guardrail, not too different from what you might see along the interstate highways. And those vehicle guardrails are much less damaging to the environment. They allow the natural passage of water. They allow most wildlife to migrate. And these guardrails have been replaced with 30-foot walls, all-night-long stadium lighting. Dozens of laws have been waived, as you mentioned, so it makes it very hard for the public to challenge these projects or even get basic information about what's going on.
Can you talk about what it's like to monitor all of this? There are a few citizen journalists along the border with drones, and they're posting videos on a regular basis. But what is it like, for example, for the Sierra Club to monitor what's really going on?
Well, quite frankly, we don't know what's going on because these border wall projects are so far spaced out along this border. The border between Mexico and the United States is 2,000 miles long. In fact, if you look at a map of the United States, you'll see the continental Pacific coast is about the same size in terms of a land region as the Mexico-U.S. border. So they're trying to track all of these different projects, not just the ones that have occurred or are occurring right now, but also there are a number of projects that have been contracted out or that are planned. And we're trying to stop all of these projects from happening, and we're going to try to tear down these walls as soon as we can. But right now, it's just chaos. It's destruction. Wild areas are being destroyed. Native American sacred sites are being destroyed. People's private lands are being condemned under eminent domain. And it's a total disaster. I mean, it's a $15 billion disaster, and it's all happening under the much greater disaster, of course, of the global pandemic.
What can you tell us about these contractors? What is the process like in giving contracts, and how transparent is this? We were trying to find information to follow the money. ProPublica had a piece back in late October called Records Show Trump's Border Wall is Costing Taxpayers Billions More Than Initial Contracts. A review of federal spending data found modifications to contracts have increased the price of the wall by billions, costing about five times more per mile than it did under previous administrations.
That's exactly right. And, you know, this is something I have a lot of experience with. I just was looking at one particular contract the other day, and it took me hours to go through it because there were 40 modifications. And these contracts, many of them will be announced at a certain amount. For example, there's a contract here in Arizona that was announced at somewhere in the $500 million region, which sounds like sounds like a ton of money, right? But that particular contract has ballooned to more than $2 billion. So it grew by, you know, a factor of four. And that has been more the rule than the exception when it comes to these border wall contracts. And they're costing taxpayers millions of dollars per mile. And this is not something that Mexico is paying for. This is ironically being paid for by the U.S. military. It's being done illegally by the Trump administration. And so it's active duty military and veterans who are bearing the brunt of the costs of this wall. Not only that, we found out recently that the Trump administration declined to basically reserve hundreds of millions of additional doses of the coronavirus vaccine, while at the same time continuing to waste billions of dollars on this border wall. And it's just frankly infuriating what they're doing.
Who's making these decisions behind the scenes?
Well, the behind the scenes situation is very disturbing. In fact, you mentioned some of some of the laws that are waived. The Trump administration has brought the total number of laws waived along the border to about 65. That means that border communities and tribal communities here in this area, we don't enjoy equal protection under the law. And that's fundamentally unfair. And for the first time in history, the contracting laws, there are 11 contracting laws that the Trump administration waived immediately prior to awarding a contract to Fisher Industries, which you may recognize them from being the contracting arm of the so-called We Build the Wall, Steve Bannon's fraudulent border wall, you know, private border wall construction company. And Fisher Industries is one of the companies that has one of these $2 billion contracts that's currently destroying the National Forest and the Wildlife Refuge immediately south of where I am today in Tucson, Arizona.
And what about the decisions, basic decisions on where to actually build the wall? Because according to this ProPublica report, much less work has been done in Texas, whereas a lot of work is being done in Arizona.
Yeah, and that's because we have federal land. I mean, this whole border wall thing makes no sense. It's about as ridiculous as somebody, you know, we've heard these stories of people who are on their deathbeds with COVID yet denying COVID and saying that it's a hoax. I mean, that's kind of the type of mentality we're dealing with when it comes to the border wall, because the places where it's being built are all being harmed by the wall. They're not benefiting from the wall. We're being destroyed by this wall. We're talking about national parks like Organ Pipe. We're talking about sacred sites like the Quito Baquito Springs. We're talking about actual graveyards like in South Texas. There's there are several cemeteries actually that are under threat. And so these walls are clearly being sited by people in Washington, D.C. who are looking at maps and drawing lines. And they've drawn lines across our rivers, across our mountains. Right now, southeast of me, the San Pedro River has been recently walled, meaning a wall built across a river. And we are very concerned that this wall is going to dam the river when it floods during our rainy season, and that the wall will be destroyed, and that the wall will destroy a lot of the national conservation area along with it. So it's just very enraging. Even the Arizona Trail is suffering the same fate. It's being blocked off at its southern terminus. It's a famous 800-mile national scenic trail that goes from Utah to Sonora, and it's now blocked by Trump's shiny new wall at great cost to the taxpayer and to the environment.
Dan, why do you think they're doing this? I mean, why are they working 24/7 on this right now and dynamiting mountainsides, cutting roads, bulldozing pristine deserts? Why are they so obsessed with this?
I think they're doing this for the same reason that the Trump administration is denying the outcome of the election. It's simply propaganda. It's a ploy to get his frankly racist base to be fired up and to be ready to go to do whatever they can to support this cult leader named Donald Trump. And it's completely enraging. It's totally unacceptable. It's unethical. And but that's what's playing out here across the border. And they'll keep going. I mean, we have entire communities like the riverfront community of Laredo, Texas, that are facing an existential threat because of dozens of miles of wall that the Trump administration has already contracted out, including to Steve Bannon's friends at Fisher Industries, to wall off this riverfront community from the river because the river is the border. And it's taking longer out there because they have private property along the border in Texas, since the border is the river. It's taking longer out there than it is here in Arizona, where we have national parks and Native American lands and things of that nature along the border that are already, for the most part, in federal hands.
Dan Millis is Borderlands Program Manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. And today we are talking about the devastating effects of Trump's border wall. This has not gotten as much attention. I mean, so many things haven't over the last 4 years for various reasons. But when you really stop and read about what has been happening, 400 miles have already been built in very remote regions of the border. The contractors are working 24/7 to build another additional 35 miles before they leave office. So as Dan said, it's not easy to keep track of all of this because so much of this is just in remote areas. Let's go to Brian Bird calling from Defenders of Wildlife. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hi, and thanks for having me. And it's great to hear my colleague, Dan Millis of the Sierra Club. He's one of the leading authorities for certain on this this disaster of a border wall going up on our southern border. So I'm glad you have him as a guest today. I can just add a little bit that, Defenders of Wildlife has been working on the border wall since the early 2000s, when we first started realizing the significance of the impact on the wildlife that call our borderlands home. And we've been sort of following this since then and challenging all of the different attempts to build the wall and to waive the laws to build this wall. We've been a partner with Sierra Club and other organizations. We have a coalition of organizations from the Pacific all the way to the Gulf of Mexico that includes immigrant rights organizations, conservation groups like Defenders of Wildlife and the Sierra Club, communities that live on the border. So there is a large constituency that opposes this wall. But I'll just add, you noted in your website that we produced a report on how many species are affected, how much wildlife is actually affected by the border wall. And we updated that and published it in a peer-reviewed journal. And we found that 1,506 terrestrial and freshwater animals are actually going to be affected by this border wall. These are all animals that are endangered or vulnerable, according to the IUCN red list. And so it's pretty stunning, the impacts of this border wall on the wildlife that are part of that landscape. And I'll just mention really quickly that this coalition of organizations is starting to talk about what the Biden administration and President-elect Biden can do to remediate some of that impact. And we're very hopeful that not only will Biden immediately stop construction of the border wall and rescind the waivers of law, but that the incoming president will begin to look for where this wall can come down and how to remediate all the impacts on wildlife and rivers and streams and communities that are so impacted.
Wow, that's so interesting. So you're talking about actually bringing the wall down. You know, I want to ask you, since you brought up all of the animals, Brian, it's just really devastating to look at the photos of some of these animals. Gary Nabon, an ethnobotanist, was quoted in The Guardian saying that the wall is going through such sensitive areas and going up so fast that no one knows what effect it's going to have on wildlife. He said, we have no idea, for example, what 24/7 lighting will have on the bats that pollinate at night. They're not used to all this light.
That's right. There's a lot of animals that we don't really think of as being immediately impacted by these types of things, but like, for instance, the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl. This is an owl that's found only in the Southwest in the Sonoran Desert, and it literally won't fly any higher than 15 feet above the ground. So we know that a 30-foot border wall is going to stop this animal from moving between its habitat in Mexico and the U.S. Butterflies. We don't yet know what the impacts on butterflies will be. And there's critical butterfly species in California, actually, that are endangered. So there's all kinds of impacts we don't really know about. And the fact that the Trump administration was able to waive all of the conservation laws that would normally protect these animals, like the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, means that the government has not studied what the impacts are on these animals. They don't know what the populations were prior to the construction, and they won't know what the populations are like after because of the waivers of law. So we're hopeful that with the incoming administration, they may, you know, obviously we hope they'll rescind those waivers of law, but we hope they'll also study what these impacts are.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for all of your great work, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Brian Bird from Defenders of Wildlife, and you can find the report that he's referring to at our website, yourcallradio.org. Dan, what are your thoughts about that? First off, Joe Biden has said there will not be another foot of wall constructed after he takes office. Are you hearing anything from the administration about the policy of actually tearing down the wall?
Well, we're not hearing much from them, but we're certainly doing what we can to reach out to them and make sure that they hear from us. And this, you know, in terms of the wall going up, they can cancel those contracts. The government has that right. We've done the research. We know that it's not a problem. We hope that they do the same research and find out that these contracts can be canceled immediately, and they should be canceled immediately. And that should be on day one of the new administration. In addition, Brian mentioned how the waiver of law needs to be rescinded. We basically need to reinstate the laws so that border communities and indigenous communities near the border receive equal protection under the law. That would go a long way towards helping people understand what's been happening, to reinstating the usual public process so that, let's say, if you live near some public land where a wall is being built, you actually get consulted beforehand. You actually get some information from the Department of Homeland Security or U.S. Customs and Border Protection about what's going on. And that would go a long way, because we at the Sierra Club, we've had some trouble legally trying to stop these walls, because all of the laws that we might possibly use for a lawsuit have been waived. That said, we have been successful so far in our lawsuits, along with the ACLU and the Southern Border Communities Coalition. We've actually won our lawsuit twice to stop the illegally funded Trump walls, the walls that are being funded with money stolen from accounts that are intended for active duty military personnel programs, as well as veterans. And we've won at the lowest federal court level, and then again at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But the Supreme Court of the United States has put a stay against the injunctions that we've won. That means that we were able to stop border wall construction for a matter of a few weeks. But then at the request of the Trump administration, the Supreme Court of the United States has stepped in and said that they will allow border wall construction to continue until the Supreme Court hears the case, probably this coming spring. And so that's why border walls are continuing, even though we have been successful in challenging the way that these new walls are being funded illegally through the military.
Dan Millis is Borderlands Program Manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. And now I would like to welcome Juan Benito Mancias, who's tribal chair of the Carrizo Comacrudo tribe in South Texas. Hi, Juan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Juan, you were quoted in The Guardian saying that the border with Mexico divided your people. And now this new wall shows no regard for your ancestors' beliefs or culture, which are tied to these lands. Can you first tell us just about your tribe and the lands that you were on?
Well, you know, this for us, this has been a battle since Clinton decided to come in and start the wall in 2005. So in a sense, we were fighting Homeland Security from going into some of the reservations in Texas, like along the border, and asking for a waiver of sovereignty. And I think for a year or two, we were able to keep them from doing that. And right now, I'm down here in Laredo by the river, where the next section of what they're proposing as a wall come through. But at one time, you know, we even fought for this, for the border to be further down into Mexico with the Texans, and they were fighting for the, you know, the Rio Grande to be the boundary. But we didn't want our people divided, and that's one reason that at the Battle of Mier in 1852 took place, and we were a big part of that. And Antonio Zapata, who was a part Carrizo, led that fight and had a big army, and accepted one of the generals that started the whole fight decided to back out and to ally with the Mexican government after they made some deals with him, and kind of left him hanging in the cold, and eventually they beheaded him and put his head on one of the lances in front of his house in Guerrero Viejo. So there is a history with us always being, you know, out in the front lines, trying to maintain some order and to keep our culture and to keep our people alive. And of course, there's Eshtogna, which is what we call ourselves. There has been an ongoing battle to maintain our culture in the sense of when we occupied that one cemetery, the Texas Historical Cemetery, is called Eli Jackson Cemetery. We occupied it for about a year, and there were a lot of allies that came in and helped us, because we're not a very big tribe, and we just needed help. And they were there. We were there for a year and a half, and eventually, with the COVID coming in, the pandemic, we had to be a lot safer with what's going on. So we had to, you know, just kind of have limited visitation to there to make sure that the wall didn't go up and through the cemetery. And what they did was they went around it, which was, you know, not a compromise for me. I want the wall stopped, because they were still digging up our ancestors. Mm. And that's exactly what they were doing in the process of what's going on now. It's an ongoing genocide, and people don't see it as that, but us as Native people in Texas, they've been digging us up so much and reinterring us somewhere else without letting us know, and without due diligence of anything prior to doing that. We're fighting pipelines. There have been 129 LNG pipelines that have gone up since 2015, and another 80 crude oil pipelines going through our sacred sites, through the Devil's River, which is through the Pecos River. And eventually, they've already gone underneath the Rio Grande, is our understanding, with the what was called the Trans-Pecos pipeline down around Presidio, Texas. So, you know, the demand for natural gas from other countries has become a problem. And what we're looking at is the reason that we don't see the wall that they're building at the border, because it's not at the border, the river being the border. They're actually creating martial law on U.S. government land where Homeland Security is the has jurisdiction. And of course, the waiving of the American Indian Religious Freedom Act and the waiving of the Native American Grace Protection and Repatriation Act has a lot to do with it. And the other 26 laws that have been waived to build this wall is like broken treaties with each U.S. citizen of this country. And with us, we're pretty accustomed to them breaking treaties with us because they mm-hmm. broke every treaty when they annexed Texas as a state and just kind of erased us from existence and out of the history books. And what we've been doing is going out, identifying these places, especially along the villages that were along the river, because we know for a fact that every 8 to 10 miles along the Rio Grande, there was a village. And that's not a, that's documented. So I think that what is happening is that people have a lack of history, lack of understanding of Texas' prime directive was to get rid of all Native Americans. And so and the three federally recognized tribes that we have in Texas are not native to Texas, so they don't know the sacred sites that they have. But they're given like land claims, and they're given all kinds of other things that belong to the other tribes that were here, like the Caddo and the Tonkawa and the Hausanai and the Waco and the Wekovai and the Karankawa and the Atakapa. So these are things that people don't recognize, that Texas has a lot of native people. A lot of them are just in denial of it. And a lot of them are now doing their DNAs, and surprisingly enough, they're coming up to be well over, 60% native.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of the amazing things that's happening is when they do their DNAs, it's up there, above the 1/4, blood quantum, if you want to see it, use the colonized version of it from the U.S. government. And it's the U.S. government telling us you're an Indian. And it's not up to them to decide that. That's us who still maintain our culture and maintain our life ways and our language.
Before we go to break, Juan, did I hear you correctly? You said 129 pipelines have been built since 2015?
Yes, ma'am. Those are LNG pipelines. Wow. There's three proposed LNG export terminals in Brownsville in Cameron County, about 13 miles from Elon Musk's SpaceX over there, which is also close to the mouth of the river of the Rio Grande.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Juan Benito Mancias, tribal chair of the Carrizo Comacrudo tribe in South Texas. We're also joined by Dan Millis, Borderlands program manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. And today we are talking about the devastating effects of Trump's border wall. 400 miles have been built so far. Contractors are working 24/7 to build another 35 before Trump leaves office. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. Today we are talking about Trump's border wall, $15 billion, 400 miles of wall have already been built, another 35. Contractors are working on another 35, 24/7. Dan Millis is Borderlands Program Manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. And Juan Benito Mancias is tribal chair of the Carrizo Comacrudo tribe in South Texas. Dan, can you jump in here? Hearing Juan just talk about what's happening on the tribe's lands, how are they getting away with violating, or are they violating lands? Is there any pushback from the state? Is there anything organizations can do to stop any of this?
Well, I can't speak for indigenous people as a non-indigenous person, but I can tell you that the Carrizo Comecrudo tribe are not alone in their resistance to border militarization efforts and border walls that are being built through sacred sites, through traditional indigenous lands. And there's a number of different tribes, just, including here in the Arizona region, the Quetzal, the Kokopa, and most notably the Otom people have been fighting really hard against these walls or have been subjected to walls or proposed walls going through their lands. Folks have probably heard, if they're following this, about Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument. It's one of Arizona's premier national parks. It's down on the border. It's the only place you can find in the United States anyway, the Oregon pipe cactus, which is a beautiful cactus, kind of similar to the saguaro. And on Oregon pipe cactus national monument, which is traditional Hiached Atam land, is the Quito-Baquito Springs, which is a pond in the middle of a desert, right? It's sort of this oasis miracle of a spot, and has been a place that has been important and central to Hiached Atam and Tohono O'odham lifeways for generations. And now Quito-Baquito Springs has literally been walled off. The wall is a 30-second walk. You know, it's within a stone's throw of the Quito-Baquito Springs, and that pond has dried up. And we think it's due to the pumping. The border wall construction uses a ton of water, hundreds of thousands of gallons of water on an almost daily basis, depending on which border wall construction project we're talking about. And these are very fragile desert aquifers, and they are pumping water from within a few miles of these sacred areas, including Quito-Baquito Springs, and it's drying it up. The water is being used for concrete to mix up the concrete and pour it into the footer for the wall, or to pour it inside of the concrete tubes that the wall is made out of, or to just be sprayed on the ground for dust control. So this is a human tragedy we're talking about for the indigenous tribes all along the border, as well as in terms of the humanitarian crisis that is ongoing here in Arizona and border wide, where areas have been militarized since the Clinton era and through the Bush era, and including through the Obama era. Areas have been militarized, and it just pushes people who are crossing the border informally outside of those militarized areas into the deserts, into the mountains, where they die by the hundreds. I know that more than 10,000 people have been, their remains have been recovered in the border region because of this dynamic, mm-hmm. where the U.S. government has basically forced people to their deaths by not addressing the root causes, not passing a just and fair immigration reform and granting people their citizenship or allowing people to come in the front doors. Instead, we continue this militarization, which gives huge contracts to the companies, not just the border wall construction companies like Fisher, but also all the other militarization companies that meet every spring in San Antonio for the Border Security Expo. And if anyone was to attend that Border Security Expo or look into previous events, you'll see that it's basically a feeding frenzy where Department of Homeland Security officials meet with the corporations that are looking to make millions, if not billions of dollars off of this ongoing tragedy. So we need to really prioritize, I think, human lives, whether we're talking about spending money on the coronavirus vaccine instead of wasting it on the border wall, whether we're talking about investing at our official ports of entry instead of building these walls so that we can hopefully cut back on the humanitarian crisis of border crossers coming into my home state, for example, and then ending up dead, which is a completely unacceptable tragedy, or whether we're talking about the lives of Native Americans, because let's be clear, this wall is an act of genocide against mm-hmm. indigenous people. It destroys the land, it destroys their remains, and they've literally waived the laws intended to protect these things so that they can continue with this tragedy.
The BBC ran a piece in February about Native American burial sites being blown up at Arizona's Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument. Cacti that are over 200 years old and have sacred significance have been chopped down. I mean, the photos are just devastating. And the government failed to even consult the Tohono O'odham Nation. Juan, has the government been in contact with you? I mean, how do you find out what's even happening on your own lands?
Well, the thing is that we stay out on the road a lot, monitoring what they're doing. Like right now, they're going through the Devil's River, and the Devil's River is where one of the big massacre sites happened for our people, where there was 256 of our people were killed, with a lone survivor, which was my great-great-grandfather. And he tells the story to the people that give out the permits, which is the Railroad Commission of Texas. They're in charge of the permits, or because of the, what do you call them? I can't even think now. But the easements, they're in charge of the easements in Texas. So they they create an easement with eminent domain, and then they come in and they give it to they give the permit to the pipelines. And one of the ones that's out there right now is Pumpco digging up and blowing up sacred sites, because I mean the whole Devil's River is a place where our people would spend a lot of the winter, and for hunting basically, and there's paintings all along that area, when paintings which we're not allowed to get into now because of the private land issue here. One of the things that we're having problems is overcoming the colonized mentality of the Spanish land grant mentality, which is our attitude, where they give you a Spanish land grant, they owned everything that was on the land, including the human population, the native people, and that's what happened here. And that and now with that mentality, the private property owners are thinking that they owned our remains and our sacred sites as well, where we can't get into them. And those sacred sites need to be paid attention to by our people as part of our culture. You know, we're supposed to visit these places at certain times of the year, and we're not being allowed to do that. And the whole idea is that they've changed, that they continue to change and use the double talk and the Orwellian mentality of saying stuff like, well, we don't want anybody impeding critical infrastructures, like the law that they passed here, House Bill 3557, which is about impeding their infrastructures. But they don't recognize the fact that the infrastructures, like Dan is saying, are the human beings. The infrastructure is the air. The infrastructure, the critical infrastructure, is the land and the water and everything around there. The wildlife, that's critical infrastructure. And they've taken the spirit out of that and made these corporations a spiritless entity that can decide and redefine, you know, what is the critical infrastructure. And that's how they passed the law here, by saying that that no protester could impede critical infrastructure. And I mean, and they made it a third degree felony. And when in reality, now we're trying to turn the words around and say, you're the criminal. Mm-hmm. You're going in there and you're killing people. When we had an explosion back in August where five people have died from that explosion as of 2-3 weeks ago. One of them finally died that about 3 weeks ago. And that was one of the Kinder Morgan plants that blew up, and it was an LNG thing that was going on in Corpus Christi. And so a lot of this stuff is how the public is viewing it, as critical infrastructure that we shouldn't be, you know, saying or talking or standing up against it. So now they've made it a felony where we can't, if we do, we're going to spend, you know, 10 years in jail or pay them $10,000. And of course, any NGO or any organization that backs them is going to have to pay $500,000. So everybody's running around getting bonds and getting their general liability insurance taken care of as well. And it costs money for the poor organizations like ourselves, who are out there watching this all the time. And if you go on my Facebook and on the Carrizo Come Crudo page Facebook, you can see how they're digging up the rock and then turning it into powder, and you're breathing in your own ancestor. Mm. And it's hard to accept that. For me, it was really hard. I had a difficult time watching what was going on there on Highway 277 in Val Verde County. Well, when they were just digging the ground and not with no care. And Highway 277, we know, is an old native trail that was used by us to go into Devil's Canyon. And they came within miles, just 2-3 miles from the massacre site, and another mile and a half from one of the Comanche sites that was a battle site as well. And people died there, and people were buried there, and they don't care. And that's the problem, is that they're more involved in trying to get what's in the ground, get it out, and than they are about the real critical infrastructure. So we need to change the narrative, or not just correct it, but change it, because they're changing the whole definition of how they're seeing things and how we're not important anymore, that we don't exist because you're not recognized, or you're recognized and you have no assets to the area, no cultural assets.
Right.
So they find ways to do that. They find the loopholes. And that's what we're working on and trying to change that mentality. And we're out there all the time watching this. Believe me, we're chasing the Whistler pipeline as well. Right now we're in Laredo because of the border wall here, and it was awful just watching what they did yesterday.
Juan, it sounds like this is just nonstop work for all of you. And given that, you know, unlike so many people, you have direct connections to this land, deep, deep connections to the land. I mean, how are you all dealing with all of this? I mean, fighting at the same time, but as you said, it goes so deep.
Well, I think that's part of the reawakening that is supposed to happen. There are prophecies in Comstock. It's called Seminole Canyon. And there, they've already taken one of our panels, which they call the White Shaman panel, and given it to one of the San Antonio White Museums to protect. And it basically, we have a deep connection to the land because we were the original people on the peyote grounds. And we followed that way. And I think that's one of the hardest things that really hurts us, is to see how they're minimizing and taking away that religion by saying, you know, no more American Indian Religious Freedom Act. And because they know that these areas are sacred, not just the peyote, but the sage, the tobacco tree that grows out here that is becoming almost extirpated because of the pollution and the constant gentrification of humanity. And I think we need to realize that it's not just the urban areas that are becoming gentrified, but the human being, the human spirit as well. And I think that's what we're noticing here. And we try to maintain that with our songs and try to maintain our life ways. And I tell a lot of our people that they need to be immersed in that culture and not just practice it, because this is a way of life. I live this every day. And those that share it with me understand that, because they know I'm out there all the time, you know, dropping tobacco or, you know, leaving some jerky for our ancestors. And to me, that's where the connection lies. The connection lies in that, not only in the living, but in our ancestors that they're digging up. I think a lot of people don't recognize the fact that the water is sacred to us. Because we're 70% water, and when that water evaporates, when we pass away, it doesn't go anywhere. It goes into the atmosphere. So you're actually drinking our ancestors, and our ancestors are bathing you and purifying you. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't recognize, that the spirituality involved here is the sacrifice that the native people continue to do to maintain some kind of balance with culture. We're not above, I mean, with creation, we're not above it or below it. But what we've been taught is that, you know, we're here to have dominion over the earth. And these people believe that. And you can't do that when you're only part of the creation. You create, you know, we're creating Armageddon is what we're doing.
Well, Juan, thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love to have you back in January to get an update once Biden takes office, to find out what he's planning to do to possibly bring down the wall.
Well, I think that they need to invite us, all the tribes that are along this boundary, to sit and talk, because we need to be equally represented. Mm. As Native people, we're not represented. We were not represented in the original Constitution. And I think it's time that we have some kind of equitability.
Well, we'd love to bring you on with some other tribal members in other states. I think that would be really important. So thank you so much for your work, Juan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Juan Benito Mancias is tribal chair of the Carrizo Comacruo tribe in South Texas. And you can find more information about what they are dealing with on a regular basis at yourcallradio.org. Dan Millis is still with us, Borderlands program manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. And now I would like to welcome Miles Traphagen to the show. Miles is Borderlands program coordinator with the Wildlands Network. Hi, Miles. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Rose. Thanks for taking interest in this topic.
Well, it's great to have you. It deserves so much more attention. Tell us what you are all doing to monitor how this wall is affecting wildlife. I understand that you have set up a number of motion-activated wildlife cameras in the San Bernardino Valley. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, this is quite a serendipitous moment because I'm out here with another group called Sky Island Alliance, and they're another conservation group that's based out of Tucson. And I'm helping them with their trail cameras today in the San Rafael Valley, which is south of Tucson, Arizona. It's a high grassland around 5,000-foot elevation, and I'm currently standing about 10 feet from the border fence. In this particular area, the border wall was not approved. They had approved 31 of 38 projects where they had taken Department of Defense funds, and the San Rafael Valley was spared. And so we're really happy about that. And so what Sky Island is doing is that they're setting up baseline monitoring with the trail cameras so that we can see what type of wildlife occurs here and in what numbers and densities. And we're doing the same at with Wildlands Network at the San Bernardino National Wildlife Refuge, which is east of Douglas, Arizona. It's in southeastern Arizona. The border fence shares the boundary with the refuge. So last year, we began setting up trail cameras when they started construction of the border wall in order to document what effect that would have on the wildlife.
Can you tell us, for those who haven't spent much time along the border, what does it actually look like?
Well, I think a lot of people would be really surprised. The farther you get from the border, the less accurate the picture most people have, and seemingly their opinion becomes stronger of the region. It's not this desert wasteland like a lot of people think. Like where I'm standing now, I'm looking at an old ranch house where they filmed the musical Oklahoma back in the 40s or whenever that movie was made. It's rolling grassland, cottonwood trees and oaks, willows and some very dry streams. But we also have really high mountains here. And the region is at the northern tip of the Sierra Madre, Occidental Mountains, that come out of Mexico. But then it also has elements of the Rocky Mountains coming from the north. So it's a place where the jaguar and the black bear cross paths, because you're getting the neotropical influence from these tropical species like coatimundi, javelina, which is like a native pig in this area. And then you have your mountain lion and black bears and your pronghorn antelope. So the temperate species are all occurring here. So the borderlands are not so much a border, but to me, they're the heartland of North America because it's so representative of the diversity across the continent. And this is arguably one of the places that has the highest biodiversity in North America, definitely in the western part of North America. This is ground zero for biodiversity.
It was fascinating to read about jaguars, and you were quoted in a Guardian piece saying that if all contracts are complete, 93% of jaguar territory will be blocked or walled off. So just to give people a visual, and we talked about this earlier with Dan, he said that until recently, animals could have walked under or through the barriers set up so that if you can visualize this, the animal could actually walk right through it. But now the 30-foot-tall wall made of 6-inch-wide steel bollards separated by 4 inches of space runs across most of the valley. And so that means the animals can no longer walk through this.
That is true.
This wall?
Yeah, nothing larger than a small cottontail could make it through that. And where I'm standing right now, it's called a Normandy barrier. So, picture, when they landed at D-Day, it's those cross-barred iron structures in order to inhibit vehicle traffic from crossing. But an animal could go under that or hop over it. But you're entirely correct that these 30-foot steel bollard walls, nothing can pass through there. And with the accompanying lighting that they have just installed, 24/7 lighting of 500-watt LED street lights that are spaced about 150 meters apart from each other for a 24-mile span, you know, you have to ask yourself, what is that going to do to the avian fauna, you know, nocturnal species, bats migrating, insects and pollinators? So we're essentially we're driving this wedge right through the borderlands and bisecting the continent. So we're essentially conducting an ecological experiment on the continental scale that has the potential for altering the evolutionary history of North America for a long time to come.
We have just about a minute left. We're getting a lot of emails from listeners who say, what can we do about this? What can we do to help? Dan, can you take that first?
Well, I think that if you are looking for something to do right away, believe it or not, there is a proposal in Congress to give another $2 billion to border walls to the outgoing Trump administration. Obviously, we don't want any more money for border walls. The incoming Biden administration doesn't want them. The whole thing's totally ridiculous. So if people go to SC, as in Sierra Club, sc.org/no-border-wall, they'll be given the opportunity to write their senators and say, please, no more money for this wall. Let's get rid of this $2 billion. I think once we stop that threat, we're going to need to make sure that we keep pushing on the Biden administration to keep their promise and to come through and build not another foot of wall after January 20th.
Okay, that is sc.org/no-border-wall. We are definitely going to follow this and do another show in January to find out what the Biden administration is planning and what it would take to actually tear down the wall. Dan Millis is Borderlands Program Manager for the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter in Arizona. Dan, thank you for your work and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Miles Traphagen is Borderlands Program Coordinator with the Wildlands Network, and you can find information about the cameras that they are setting up to monitor animal activity in the area. Miles, thank you so much for joining us from the border, and thanks for your work.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.